The following program sponsored by Christian Training and Development Services, Hanson Chiropractic, Northwest Family Life, Ludeman Capital Management, Network Services, and Cannon Beach Christian Conference Center.
Hello, and welcome to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. Mike is an author, teacher, and conference speaker, and is president of Christian Training and Development Services. Creation Matters is dedicated to the teaching of the biblical and scientific truths about God's creation. In the beginning, God created, and for by Him were all things created. And now here's your host of Creation Matters, Mike Riddle.
Hey, welcome everybody. I'm not Mike Riddle. I'm Pete Talbot. But I'm a much happier, a much more contented, a much more satisfied, just a completely blessed Pete Talbot, as Thor mentioned a few minutes ago. Last night, my daughter-in-law, Jennifer Talbot, gave birth to Andrew James Talbot, and I just have to tell all of Seattle that at 8 pounds and 9 ounces, he is one cute little boy. So, I'm glad I believe in creation and not evolution, because that boy is a miracle. I'll tell you that right now. Now, I am sitting in for Mike Riddle, but hey, the good news is that Mike Riddle is also with us from California. Mike, are you with us there?
I sure am, right down here in sunny California. It did not rain today here. We're at Biola University.
Well, we're a little jealous. It's a little nippy up here, but... I'm glad you had a good day of weather down there. You also, we are fortunate enough to have a guest with us tonight, Dan Criswell, who's with the Institute for Creation Research there in San Diego, PhD in molecular biology. And Dan Criswell, it is good to have you with us here on Creation Matters as well.
Thank you. It's good to be there.
Hey, I think we're going to have a fun time tonight, don't you, Mike?
Oh, we've got a terrific topic tonight, and if you have children in high school, this is a topic they need to hear. If you have children that are going to get ready to go to high school, and whether it's a Christian high school, public high school, or you just want to know something, our topic tonight is dynamic.
Okay, now let me just say this. All of you people out there listening, all your moms and dads, all of you grandparents out there, all of you just friends who have kids out there, go give them a call. Have them tune in right now to KGNW. That's 820 on the AM dial, station you're listening to right now, because this program is just going to be flat-out encouraging, as actually I think all of these Creation Matter programs are. I just get blown away by what I'm learning from Mike Riddle on this program every week. Okay, so what is our focus?
Well, first of all, Pete, congratulations on being a granddad.
Oh, it's my fifth. I've got four granddaughters, and this is my first grandson. I would have been happy with a fifth granddaughter. I just love these little sweet little girls. But this little boy, I'm telling you, he is something. I'm thrilled. And I've got a sixth grandchild coming in just a few more months. So they're coming fast and furious.
Well, we only have three, but boy, aren't they a special treat. We have three, Taylan, Kinsey, and Trenton, two girls and a boy.
You know, this is going to be the preening and bragging grandfather hour tonight, isn't it?
Isn't it wonderful to be able to spoil?
I love it. Okay, now your focus tonight,
our
Mike,
focus is one that people need to hear.
Okay, what is it?
Called Refuting the Best Evidence Evolution Has to Offer. And I'm going to tell you right now, it doesn't take much more than ninth grade science to do this, folks. And I always repeat that. It doesn't take much more than ninth grade science to beat the best evolution has to offer on their evidence. So we've got quite a topic tonight, and it's going to be at a level I think anybody can understand.
Okay, now, do you want to be able to take calls from our listeners tonight, Mike?
We sure do. If they want to call in, have them give us a call, Pete.
It could be on any of the topics that, for example, maybe their kids or maybe that they're going through. Maybe they're in some undergraduate or some graduate classes, and maybe they're struggling in some of their classes. So is it safe to say that any question is fair game for you guys tonight?
Any question is a fair question. They can even email us later if they want to at go to our website, creationmatters.org. If they don't want to call us, they can email us later, and we will respond to that, too.
Okay, that's creationmatters.org. But for right now, if you've got a question, and you can hop on, even though I'm here in Seattle, and Mike and Dan are in Southern California, we can all talk together. If you've got a question about evolution, about creation, maybe something you don't understand, maybe a conflict in your mind about evolution versus creation, this is definitely the time to call. Here's the toll-free number, 800-955-8200. That's 800-955-8200. And I might point out, it's appropriate for kids to call. Kids can call. They've got issues. So you kids that are out there listening, maybe you're in the car listening to the radio, or you're at home, and you've got a question that just seems to be bugging you.
Yeah, I know some teachers out there, Pete, that might even give extra credit for students calling in.
Great idea. So anybody, young or old, can call in tonight, 800-955-8200. And Mike Riddle and Dan Criswell from Southern California will be able to answer those questions for you. Again, 800-955-8200. Okay, where are we going to start now?
Well, let's start with that. When we look at these textbooks, the textbooks have evolution all the way through them, the science textbooks, especially the biology textbooks. But they usually have one chapter called evolution. And in that chapter, they always talk about something called the peppered moth. The peppered moth. Now, what we have here, before the 1900s, we had these peppered moths in England, and they were light-colored and dark-colored. And these peppered moths supposedly, notice they used the word supposedly, we found out later they didn't, like to land on these trees. And we got light-colored and dark-colored peppered moths, and these trees start out rather light.
All right.
So that means the light-colored peppered moths kind of blend in.
All right.
And the birds like to come after these moths, and which ones do they see? Well, they see the dark ones because they don't blend in very well.
Okay.
So the birds start eating up all the black ones because that's the ones they see. All of a sudden, we have the Industrial Revolution. Now comes all this soot and carbons and everything, gets into the trees, and guess what? It turns the trees darker. So which moths do the birds see now?
Uh-huh.
Now they see the light ones. So all of a sudden, we have a population shift. We have more dark ones surviving because they blend in, and the lighter ones are getting all eat up. And they put this down and say, hey, this is in the evolution chapter. Well, is this evolution at all? Absolutely not, folks. Even most evolutionists now recognize this has nothing to do with evolution.
Are you telling me that this is in our textbooks right now for our kids?
It's in the evolution chapter in our textbook. Most of them don't try and call it evolution, but they refer to it as a population change, which could, over long periods of time, lead to evolution. But you know, 15 years ago, that's what was being taught as a fact. This was evolution in the making.
Isn't that something?
Had nothing to do with evolution. It had everything to do with selection. Just selection. That's all it was. You know, here's the question to ask. If you're listening out there, here's your question to ask. This is a very good question to ask in almost every one of these cases. What did we start with? Light and dark-colored peppered moths. What did we end with? Light and dark copper-colored peppered moths. Folks, if that is the best evolution has to offer, they are bankrupt. They don't have a leg to stand on. And we're going to find out they still don't, even with all their other evidences. Isn't that incredible, that what was being taught? And it's still being taught by some people who believe in evolution.
Well,
that's not very good science at all.
Well, that is not only not good science, it actually is not science at all. It's not even bad science. It isn't even within the science category. Hey, now, we want to take some calls, and if you don't mind, Mike, I think we're going to start taking calls right now, even though I want to let the rest of our listeners know, hey, this is your opportunity, folks. Evolution is something that is facing all of our kids, really all of us, in and out of the church. So if you've got a question for Mike Riddle or Dan Criswell, remember, Dan Criswell is with the Institute for Creation Research out of San Diego, PhD in molecular biology. And between Dan and Mike Riddle, I'll just bet we have some interesting answers to your questions. We're going to go to Corey right now, but for the rest of you, give us a call, toll-free 800-955-8200. I hope we can take a whole lot of calls today. 800-955-8200. And Corey, you are on from Seattle, and have you got a question for Mike or Dan?
Well, I mean, I've studied all the world's religions, and I mean, I can't necessarily say that there's creation or evolution. I mean, maybe they're intertwined in such a way. I mean, my question is, isn't, from what I've heard, even from the Darwinian people and people who are more involved in that aspect of science, isn't it far more credible that we actually evolved as far as scientific data than what I'm saying is creationism more faith-based, or is it actual science like the Darwinian approach, you know, to evolution? I mean, did we evolve? I kind of lost my train of thought, but what I'm saying is, doesn't evolution have a lot more scientific data behind it as opposed to creationism?
Well, let me start here. It's an interesting question. You state all the world's religions, but you know all the world's religions can't all be the same. They're all very different, so they all can't be true.
Well,
but
yeah, that I know.
The matter of faith, evolution requires tremendous amounts of faith because they can't produce the evidence. All we see is information in textbooks, and we're going to be talking about that. And Dan, Dr. Criswell here, has got tremendous credentials, and he's written a lot on this, well-published. And Dr. Criswell, can you respond to some of this?
Well, let me ask you, Corey, what is the evidence for this evolution that's taken place? Do you know what that evidence is?
I really don't. I mean, I haven't researched it enough. I mean, I have an uncle who's really into evolution, into science, and I'm not saying that I'm basing everything off what I've gathered from him and his information. I'm just saying that, the problem I have with creationism, in a sense, is to look at it from a logical perspective. If God created everything, then what was he doing eternally before he created it? And if God had a cause, then that means that their power is higher than God. There are causes which make him create.
Well,
I mean, there is talk of intelligent design even inside the scientific community, and I'm open to creationism. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm open to that. I mean, I'm open to whatever is and whatever science can put forth. I just don't know exactly whether there's evolution or creationism. Maybe there's both.
Well, let's let Dr. Criswell give an answer here.
All right.
Well, let's go back to the first question you raised, that, it seems feasible that man has evolved.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question to an evolutionist would be, what is that mechanism for that evolutionary process?
Yeah.
And today, currently, their best mechanism is mutation and natural selection. Selection for mutation events that would improve a genome and take a genome from a molecules to man type of scenario.
Uh-huh.
So let's look at that mechanism for a minute. What happens when a mutation occurs? You get a change in a particular gene, right?
Okay.
And are you familiar with what kind of mutations occur in human beings?
No, I'm not. No, I mean,
well, let me give you a few examples. Have you ever heard of sickle cell anemia?
Yes.
Or cystic fibrosis?
Yes.
How about cancer?
Yes.
See, these are all examples of mutational events.
Okay.
Now, you answer the question, does that take you towards a better organism, or does that make the organism weaker?
Huh. Okay.
Okay, so if evolution is going to say that mutations is the mechanism to convert one organism into another type of organism, I would like to see evidence of a positive mutation anywhere that would take us on that path of changing a single-celled organism into another, a multicellular organism, and finally all the way up to man. So currently, that's the dogma that evolution has proposed, that mutations are this mechanism, but yet the observable science, the science that we can take in the laboratory and test and observe, tells us that mutations are always harmful. They always harm the population of organisms as a whole.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
I would also stress the fact that no one has come up with any plausible explanation of where you would get all of the biochemicals that are necessary to even bring an organism into existence. So there's not even a feasible scenario that would explain where life could have just spontaneously occurred.
Yeah.
So it puts you in this position where there has to be a God that has created all of these biological systems, even to get the whole process started, even if evolution were true. But see, you don't have either. You don't have any scientific scenario that would get you the biological chemicals that you need to get started, and then you don't have a mechanism to convert all these systems into different kinds of organisms.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I think I'm not against God or anything like that. I think a lot of it is probably, the problem I have in some ways with evolution, too, is the question I've asked is, what are we evolving to? And, you know, what's the point? What are we really evolving to? Is the universe evolving to a greater perfection?
Actually, we're de-evolving. We're actually going downhill. The number of mutations every child has is at least 100 new mutations over their parent. We're going extinct if it wasn't for modern medicine. We're going the wrong way. That is just the opposite of what evolution teaches, but it is exactly what the Bible teaches, that at the fall, sin, decay started, and all of creation groaneth. So the Bible actually teaches exactly what we observe in all nature.
We have what's called a mutational load that we're all carrying, and these are mutations that we picked up from our parents, and then as we grow older, we add those mutations. That's exactly what happens with cancer, is you get one mutation and two, three, four, and pretty soon you've got cells that are no longer under control.
Corey, this has been a fabulous question that you've presented to these two guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate it very much. Do you have more questions for them, or do you want to just keep listening?
I have some more questions.
Okay, hold on. We'll be back with Corey, Mike Riddle, and Dan Criswell right after the break. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Pete Talbot here, sitting in for Mike Riddle, but only sort of sitting in for Mike Riddle, because Mike is with us, calling in from California, along with his good friend, Dan Criswell, who is with the Institute for Creation Research out of San Diego. And Mike and Dan, so far, this has been another humdinger program. We've got Corey on the line, who has another question to ask you, but I first want to tell the rest of our listeners here, this is your opportunity. This whole area of evolution versus creation is a serious area. It's not being dealt with, for the most part, within the church. Your kids, your grandkids are dealing with a lot of the nonsense of evolution. And I just think you ought to call in if you've got a question. Even you kids out there that are listening right now, you've got questions. You're being told things in class. Hey, let's just have a little bit of fun with this. Call in and see what Mike and Dan have to say. Our toll-free number, 800-955-8200. I hope you call 800-955-8200. And Dan, Corey, are you still with us?
I'm here.
Corey, you said as we went to the break that you had another question for Mike and Dan. Go ahead with that question.
Okay, thank you. My other question is, a lot of scientists talk about the universe and the age of the universe being like 2,500 million, if not billions of years old. And of course, I guess that would fall more in the line of evolution too. What do you think of those questions as far as the age of the universe and how old is creationism?
Well, first of all, that is a very common question, Corey. It's an excellent question we should be asking. And I think we should be asking that question in the churches too, to get the churches to wake up. And before I answer that, I just want to point out that a lot of listeners out there may or may not think this is a very important issue, but it may not be important to you folks. But your grandchildren and your children are going to leave. We lose so many from the church because the parents did not take action. You know, we're losing 70% of our youth from the church because nobody taught them on this information. But to answer that question, it is an excellent question. What is the age of the universe? The evolutionists now have calculated to be about 13.7 billion years old.
Yeah.
And what did they base that on? A lot of speculation. There's a tremendous amount of speculation going on in cosmology. There's some good science going on, but the Bible certainly doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches a very young Earth, only about 6,000 years old. But did you know, when I said evolution speculates, what does the science teach us? Well, the current science is now showing things aren't that old. But the problem is, the evolutionists won't put that in their textbooks. Our students are being kept from that information. I have a word for that. It's called censorship. They're afraid of the science. That's why we have a problem with the whole science area. Evolution is not promoting science. They're promoting their own particular view, their own particular philosophy. But the helium we find in zircon rocks, there's many, many scientific evidences. Comets give us good evidence that the universe is not that old. The sun itself gives us evidence it's not that old. So even the sodium in the oceans gives us evidence the world is not that old. But, you know, none of these get into the textbooks. I wonder why. We need to get back, and I say this almost every week I'm on here, folks. We need to get back to teaching science, good science in the classroom, not somebody's religious faith called evolution. So if you really want to get some more on that, there's a website, the Institute for Creation Research website. And Dr. Griswold, do you have that?
Yeah, you could contact us at www.icr.org.
They have tremendous research papers. Now, these are all PhD scientists out there doing the original research in physics and geology and chemistry and biology. Even we have a Hebrew scholar on that selection who has studied the Hebrew verb forms in Genesis and said, Genesis clearly says each creation day was a literal day, meaning the earth is only about 6,000 years old, according to the Bible, and the science supports that. Great questions, Corey.
Corey, you and others, let me give that website again. It's icr.org, icr.org. Or another one, which I am equally fond of, is creationmatters.org.
Right.
Creationmatters.org.
If they go out to that website, they can see a whole list of other good websites like answersingenesis.org. You'll find thousands and thousands of papers out there, free to download.
Corey, I want to thank you for your call. You've just been a wonderful caller, and we hope you'll call again.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to Tom on a car phone, and you've got a question about evolution.
Yes, if evolution is true, then who evolved first, the male or the female?
Wonderful question.
And I've got another one.
Well, let's deal with one at a time. Go ahead, Mike or Dan.
Well, that's a great question. Which one would come first, the male or the female? And I don't know if they have an answer for that, but, you know, we do. We have an answer. And Dr. Criswell has an answer, too.
Well, a typical response for that would be that during development, the reproductive organs, the gonads, don't differentiate until later in development. And then if it's a male, which would be determined by the Y chromosome, those reproductive organs will leave the body cavity and assume their position in the male. And so from an evolutionary standpoint, they would say that essentially that reproductive organ probably started out as being able to produce both female eggs and male sperm. And then that's
right.
How it would differentiate then into the two sexes. But you've actually brought up a question that is not adequately answered by the evolutionary community. This is a very, very serious problem with evolution, as you've noticed.
But you know, the Bible has the answer. Man came first.
Mm-hmm.
God created man from the dust, Adam, and then came Eve. We have the answer. Isn't that incredible? The Bible has answers.
Right. And I've got a couple others. One is, if what organ evolved first? Did the liver evolve first, or did the heart evolve first? And if they evolved separately, then did we have a liver just walking around by itself looking for a heart?
Well, you've asked another great question that evolution has a difficult time with. And what we see in vertebrate development, anyway, is you'll see the liver and the heart both present. In a fish, for example, the liver is a little bit more, I guess I could use the word primitive, because it doesn't function completely like ours does. And there are fewer chambers in the heart. Now, an evolutionist would say that the different vertebrate classes retell a little bit about the evolutionary history of vertebrates. So you would start with a two-chambered heart in a fish, for example, and then a three-chambered heart in an amphibian, and then finally a four-chambered heart in a bird and mammal. And then this would be retelling the evolutionary history of how the heart developed. And then you would see the same type of thing in a kidney, where the kidney is supposedly a more primitive structure in fish and a more complex structure in humans or mammals. But actually what has happened is those structures are actually designed for the animal to live in a particular environment. For example, a fish is not warm-blooded. It doesn't have to produce a lot of heat from its heart to keep its body warm. It stays at the temperature of the water that it's in. And it also doesn't have to fight gravity so much to pump the blood around its body. Its body is supported by water, and so there's less pressure that's needed. So, therefore, it only needs a two-chambered heart. So this is a design feature of these structures. And so, again, like you have observed, it doesn't fit an evolutionary scenario very well as far as deciding which came first, because obviously an animal has to have both to be alive.
Right.
Oh, boy. Appreciate your call as well, Tom. I'm afraid we're going to have to go to a break right now.
Okay.
Music is coming up, but thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Now that means that we've got a line open for you. Stacy, hang on in Seattle. You're going to be next, but folks, you can call in. 1-800-955-8200. Do you have a question about evolution or creation? 800-955-8200. Hey, is this fun or what? You're listening to Creation Matters. Pete Talbot sitting in for Mike Riddle, who is in California, but also on the line with us, along with his friend Dan Criswell, a PhD in molecular biology, and working with the Institute for Creation Research in San Diego.
Hey, Pete, before we go to the next caller, I'd like to bring that last question to close, because it was such a good question. Which came first, the heart or the lungs or the liver?
Okay, let's
do it. Dr. Criswell talked about the fish having two chambers and mammals having four chambers.
Yeah.
The end result of that is the fish, in order to, if people out there thinking the fish heart maybe evolved into a mammal heart, that's scientifically impossible. As a fish, as it's going through those transitions in the heart, it would no longer be viable in its environment in the water, and it couldn't survive out of the water yet. So the whole transition stage is a killer to it. Then, as we said earlier, mutations do not improve things. There's no mutation that we have that's going to improve that fish.
They go negative.
They go negative, and that's exactly what we observe. But, you know, they don't teach that in the schools. They're still suggesting mutations are the main source of new information. We can't observe that anywhere on this planet.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, folks, if you want more amazing information, wonderful articles that you can download, go to creationmatters.org. That's creationmatters.org. Or also ICR.org. That's obviously the website for the Institute for Creation Research in San Diego. ICR.org or creationmatters.org. Fascinating stuff. This is the time for you to do that. Now, we've also got a line open. We want you to give us a call, 800-955-8200. That's 800-955-8200. Any question at all for Mike Riddle or Dan Criswell, your opportunity to get those questions answered, and I hope you will jump on this opportunity. Again, 800-955-8200. Let's go to Stacy in Seattle. You've got a question about young Earth or old Earth. You're on with Mike Riddle and Dan Criswell.
Thank you very much. My question is in relation to young Earth, old Earth debate. If we are, in fact, living on a young Earth, I'm wondering where dinosaurs come into play.
Where do dinosaurs? That is, of all the questions I get, and I do about 250 to 300 talks a year all over the world, That is one of the top three questions I get asked. So thank you for that, Stacy. That is a very important question. You know, it's not only just important, but it's important for our young children to understand this.
Okay.
And incidentally, on the 20th, we're going to be doing a video of this whole thing on dinosaurs, producing a brand new DVD for children. And when we do this, we find out adults learn a lot.
Yeah, and I want to interrupt here just for one moment. Forgive me, Stacy, and forgive me, Mike and Dan. But you mentioned there just, Mike, this is something that children need to understand. Well, I'm here to tell you, I'm in my 50s. I've been a Christian for an awful long time. This whole area of evolution and creation, at least where I've gone to church, in some pretty wonderful churches, has ignored this. And this is not just for kids. This is for adults, just like me. I am enjoying this every bit as much as any junior high or high school kid out there. I just thought I'd pass that on, Mike. You're not just talking to kids. You need to be talking to people like me as well.
Well, thank you, Pete. Well, so where do the dinosaurs fit in? Well,
great question.
From the biblical viewpoint, on day six of creation, God made humans, but he also made land animals, which would include the dinosaurs. So the Bible, right there in Genesis chapter 1, teaches that dinosaurs and people were living at the same time.
Okay.
We can also turn to the book of Job, chapter 40, verse 15. In Job chapter 40, verse 15, it talks about a creature called Behemoth. Now, what was that creature? Well, here's how the Bible, this is how God actually describes Behemoth in the Bible. It says, first of all, it's a plant eater. It's describing it as a plant eater. So that rules out an alligator, because alligators eat us and other meat.
Okay.
Then it says it has a tail like a cedar. That's a pretty good sized tail. That's not a twig, as we would see on a hippopotamus. This is not an elephant, so it rules those creatures out. So it's got a large tail, and it says that its bones are like bars of iron. And now we have a creature that's a plant eater. It's got a huge tail, and it's got huge bones. And it also, God says, it is the chief of the ways of God. That rules out hippopotamus, alligator, and elephant altogether.
Sure.
What was this creature? Well, we don't know for sure because we weren't eyewitnesses there, but it sure sounds like a description of a dinosaur, like an apatosaurus. But is there any science to support this? So thank you, Stacy, for this question. There's overwhelming science. See, the evolutionists have a problem with the dinosaurs, a big problem. And first of all, their biggest problem is, where did the dinosaurs come from? You know, when you go to museums, what do you see?
Mm-hmm.
Dinosaurs. When you look in textbooks and other books, what do you see? Dinosaurs. You know what's missing? All the transitions leading up to the dinosaurs. Why don't they have those in the books in the museums? Because they never found them. Every once in a while, they will draw a picture by an artist, but why aren't they in the museums? Because they were created after their kind, as the Bible teaches. But you also know we find dinosaur bones that are not fossilized today. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Why don't we see that in the books? We find pictures, petroglyphs of dinosaurs all over. Now, if people never saw dinosaurs, how did they know to draw these? And they didn't have communications lines to communicate back and forth, so we see these in different continents. So we find tremendous evidence in a church in England, a large cathedral in England, built in the 1400s, so 1200s when it was built, but in the 1400s, a gentleman was buried there, Bishop Bell. And you go to his tomb there in the church, and now I want to clarify something here. He was buried there in the late 1400s. Now, we didn't know scientifically dinosaurs existed until the 1800s. We had found bones, but we didn't have a clue what they were. So any evidence of dinosaurs or pictures before the 1800s, somebody had to see something because we didn't know they existed scientifically until the 1800s. But on his tomb, guess what we find? Very clear pictures of dinosaurs. Isn't that amazing?
That is interesting.
Yeah, so none of that seems to get reported because evolution is a protected religion in this country.
Yeah.
And we need to treat it that way and make sure our students don't get involved with that. We need to protect our students more and more. And we send them out to the public schools very unprotected. We send them to some Christian schools where they get fed some wrong ideas and they get fed a lot of good ideas.
Yeah.
But we as parents are the first line of education. Whether we send our children to public schools, Christian schools, home is the first line of education. And we need to be very diligent on that.
Stacy, thank you so much for
thank
the call.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful question and wonderful answers, Mike and Dan. Don't forget creationmatters.org. And if you've got a question for Mike Riddle, or for Dan Criswell, give us a call right now. We've got time for you. 800-955-8200. Hello, everyone. Pete Talbot here, sitting in for Mike Riddle. We're part of Creation Matters tonight. I'm here in the studio in Seattle at KGNW, and Mike Riddle is with his friend Dan Criswell from the Institute for Creation Research in San Diego. They're on the phone with us, but we're taking calls. We don't have that much more time, so I think we're going to go to some more calls right now. We're going to go to Dave in Bellingham, and you've got a question for Mike Riddle. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, someone gave me the last issue of the National Geographic. It's got a big question on the cover. Was Darwin wrong? And then you're supposed to read the article, and by the time you read it, you're an expert on evolution. And they've got a big picture of a giraffe skeleton, and they have Darwin's comment. He says he was amazed how natural selection could create the giraffe's tail that would swap the flies away so it could survive. And I thought, wasn't he actually ever amazed about how the neck could evolve, and have they ever found any short-necked giraffes?
Great question, Dave. The National Geographic, again, they are very, very much entrenched into evolutionism, and their cover story was Darwin wrong. Well, the answer to that is very simple. Yes, he was wrong. He was completely wrong, and everybody that's following is also wrong. And natural selection, they really take natural selection to an area where they have no observational evidence. First of all, we do believe natural selection. It does happen. It means survival of the fittest, and it does mean our ability to adapt. But here's the key. Natural selection only selects from what already exists, and in many cases, it causes losses of information, never a gain in information. In order for evolution to occur, we have to have gain in information in the DNA molecule. We have no mechanism for that, so the whole National Geographic thing was just the same information they've been printing over the last 50 years.
Mike, is there any case at all where there's a gaining in the process rather than a losing?
There's none that we have observed. Dr. Criswell, do you know of any?
I don't know of any, although I do know that evolutionists frequently use the term gain of function for genes that undergo a mutation that changes or alters the function of a particular protein. But it does just what I said, though. It alters the performance of that particular protein. It doesn't change it actually into a different kind of protein that's more efficient at what it used to do.
And here's one of their best evidence. We were talking about best evidence. Dr. Criswell is an excellent person on this. They talk about antibiotic resistance, the bacteria becoming resistant to our best antibiotics, and they call that evolution. Dr. Criswell, you've written a lot on this. Give us some quick bullet points on that.
Well, with antibiotic resistance, as you've observed, they propose that this is something that's evolved in different types of bacteria. But actually what is taking place is bacteria are trading genes through a process called horizontal gene transfer. And this is something unique to bacteria. You don't see it in plants and animals. But this is one of the ways that bacteria provide themselves with genetic variability to be able to adapt to a particular environment. They're able to get genes from their environment. So they acquire antibiotic-resistant genes. And so what they're actually doing is getting something that already exists. They're not mutating a gene inside of their cell that provides them with resistance to antibiotics. And our misuse of antibiotics has killed off many of the bacteria that weren't resistant, and it's raised the population of bacteria that are resistant, the bacteria that have been able to acquire those antibiotic-resistant genes. Now, there are some bacteria that actually undergo mutations in some of their genes, mutations, for example, in the ribosomes, that also provide them with resistance. But those mutations are accompanied with a cost. You find that these bacteria grow slower. They're less able to compete with the bacteria that aren't antibiotic resistant. And many times this mutation that provides resistance to one antibiotic makes the bacteria more susceptible to another type of antibiotic. So this really isn't an upward mechanism that would enable the antibiotic resistant bacteria to become superior to the wild type that was in existence before. This is, again, the mutations are a loss of function. You get a mutation that makes them resistant, but there's a cost for that resistance.
Wouldn't it be nice if we get that information to the schools? We hope people can partner with us by going out to creationmatters.org and help us get this information out to the students. And we have a whole dinosaur project we need your help on, producing a brand new DVD, a book for our children, and getting more and more scientists out there that can get this information into the schools.
Mike and Dan, what a great show. And Louise, my apologies from Tacoma. Her question is, what is legal for public school teachers to discuss regarding creation? Maybe we can talk about that on the next edition of Creation Matters. Blessings, everyone. Thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. If you'd like more information on today's topic or information about Christian training and development services, simply call 425-269-3196. That's 425-269-3196. Or go to the website creationmatters.org. That's creationmatters.org. And click on the KGNW radio box. Join us next Tuesday at 6 when we'll discover and discuss the truth that for by Him all things were created. That's all right here next week on Creation Matters, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live.